Thank you, Bill Curry Ford, for presenting the Ira Kaufman podcast. Lock in current incentives now, plus $1,000 Ford bonus cash if you custom order a new Ford at Bill Curry Ford. GM Sean Sullivan, he's going to help you personally give you an additional Ira Kaufman podcast discount. Maybe you want that new Ford Bronco. That's awesome. A Maverick, a Mustang, Roush, of course, an F-150. Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. BillCurryFord.com, home of the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles.
You know, I was a little hungry going into the fourth quarter, Steve, so I got the mahi spread with crackers, my traditional salad with chicken, vanilla with chocolate sprinkles, gentlemen, a classic. We will examine this game in depth, and I will, of course, point out that I'm the only one who got it right.
Ira, you can rest easily knowing that Florida's Elite Restoration is just one phone call or mouse click away at floridaselite restoration.com. Just the way it sounds, Florida's Elite Restoration, they're a fantastic local company that services the entire Bay Area. They've got all the top-notch technology. Owner Josh Martin, 14 years he spent in the insurance business as an adjuster. He knows what goes on the other side. Now he's helping homeowners and business owners and businesses that service homeowners with honest service, caring service, understanding service, free assessments in your home of the damage. Call him whether you're a business owner or a homeowner. Florida's Elite Restoration. The phone call is easy as well, 727-807-1005. You can call 24/7. They will respond quickly. Florida's Elite Restoration.
Arians wants this more than anything, almost as much as he wants a second Lombardi trophy. Giselle could be a factor.
Here we are, Bucks fans, sitting at 8-3, and it feels so good. What a win in Indianapolis. This is the Ira Kaufman podcast, starring the man himself, Ira Kaufman. He's got a million nicknames. We don't need to get into them all now, Ira. We know who you are. You're the guy with the donut in his hand and the coffee in the other hand, your laptop occasionally, and it's all brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's very first family of Ford, GM Sean Sullivan. He's all jacked up, giving people left and right the Ira Kaufman discount. Everybody just about gets a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. New and used vehicles, Ira. Unbelievable. And, of course, Bill Curry Ford, 61 years, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium, family-owned. The Bill Curry name is there, owned by the Curry family. Sean is the GM, the big boss, and he wants to help you personally. It's no joke. You're not going to get this kind of service at any other dealership unless your uncle is the owner or the boss. Sean is taking care of Bucks fans every way he can. He's been doing it now for years. And that service, that also includes their incredible award-winning body shop. I've had some use of that, Ira. You know how I drive. And, of course, if you want to get out of a lease, you want to get into a Ford Maverick, an F-150, Sean is your guy. Don't hesitate. BillCurryFord.com. Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. It's in Publix. Find where it is everywhere at BigStormBrewery.com. Punch in your zip code there. You will find the tap rooms and you will find Big Storm Beer. And our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration. They are the first phone call, the first website visit whenever you have a disaster in your home or your business. If you find mold, you have a leak, a flood, fire, Florida's Elite Restoration. Ira, thrilling win. I know you feel this is a needle mover, this victory in Indianapolis. The floor is yours.
A needle mover, Stevie. Not bad. I could sign off on that. This one had a different taste, a different smell. Let us not downplay how well the Colts were playing coming into this game. They dismantled Buffalo on the road. That game was over in about 12 minutes. And they had no answers for Jonathan Taylor. They made Josh Allen look really bad. While the Bucks played far from a perfect game, they still won by beating Indianapolis, Lee, at their own game. Turnovers. And they ran better than the Colts did. Fournette outplayed Taylor. Who would have said that before the game started? I'll throw this out there, Buck fans. I can just hear him jumping on me. You might even disagree. I don't think Brady's playing great right now. I don't think he's playing great. Thank God for Gronkowski, because they did a job on Godwin and Evans. Lee, the only thing I can think of going forward is I think when Antonio Brown comes back, which could be the Atlanta game, maybe this too deep zone, maybe they'll find some more ways to get some downfield passing going. Because right now, Lee, they don't have that. They really don't have that element much. You know, they're not taking any deep shots. But they won this game, Lee, and I thought it was a character win. I think they got this division locked up, barring a repeat of the 2008 debacle that December. They're going to the playoffs, and they're going to win this division. So now I think it's playoff seeding, Lee, and as Arians responded to me today, home field advantage means an awful lot this year. Full stadiums. The Bucs are playing sensational at home. And I don't think that number one spot's out of reach, Lee.
Oh, no, it's not out of reach. It's not out of reach at all, although you wonder. Arizona keeps winning with a backup quarterback. So, it's going to be difficult for me to believe they're going to start losing when they get Kyler Murray back. So, I don't know if anybody's going to catch them. And the Packers, you know what? If the Bucs got to play the Packers on the road year after year after year after year after year. The Packers choke at home in the playoffs. In Green Bay, when it turns to winter, you got to put a coat on and you got to brace for another choke job in the playoffs by Aaron Rodgers. They do it every year. This two deep zone stuff, it's really intriguing. And I don't know what the answer is. I hear a lot of people say, oh, you know, this two deep zone, the Bucs can't pass against it. They're shut down, they're locked down. And over the weekend, I saw a feature, Greg Cosell, a video breaking down all the plays the Bucs used to scheme receivers open in a two-deep zone without Antonio Brown.
What's going on here? First of all, they threw two deep shots to Scotty Miller. One, Brady was off target. They were out of sync, whatever it was. It was a hell of an interception. And the other one, they drew the famous Ira Kaufman pass interference call. So they took a couple of shots. The two-deep zone, I mean, you can see it. They're double-teaming Mike Evans. And I think Brady is so well trained from his days in New England, just take what's open. You don't force it. Take what's open. If they're going to play me like that, I'll just carve them up, chew them up, spit them out. Look at the last drive. The Bucs, they didn't even have a third down. They're just first down, second down, first down, second down. Okay, we've eaten up all this clock. We'll hand it off to Lenny. He runs it all the way in, and now we got to pray that they don't come back and score. I mean, I think we're nitpicking. I mean, no, Brady hasn't been perfect. He's still sort of feeling out what he wants to do, but he's raised the game, I think, of Fournette in the passing game. He's catching the ball in better spots. He's being more aggressive after the catch. He's bowling people over. Gronk, obviously, has played incredible the last couple of games. You know, here we are. They're the number one scoring team in the league. They put up 38 points. And we're saying Brady's not playing great. You know, I understand the defense generated turnovers, but I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Well, what you're glossing over, Steve, is a first half where they had seven possessions, three and outs, Lee, and two turnovers. And they scored two touchdowns. Okay. I think things are going to change when Antonio Brown comes back, Lee. I just got a feeling that you're going to see more 25-yard completions, which we're not seeing. We're not seeing, and maybe I am nitpicking. Speaking of that final drive, Lee, I haven't heard anybody bring this up, and maybe I'm reaching here, but I don't see where Frank Reich talked about it. I don't see where Arians was asked about it. Lee, on the touchdown run by Leonard Fournette, I turned to Zach, our intern, who was with me at Big Storm, and I said right then and there, they let Fournette score. And
you think so?
if they didn't, I think they should have, because it stopped the clock and they get the ball back. You know, they do a chip shot field goal with no time left. And you can't have that if you're Indianapolis. Did that go through your mind at all, Lee, or you just think Fournette was legit on that?
Oh, I think the Bucs blocked the hell out of the Colts. Now, I never thought of it this way. Are you saying that the Colts just you know, just stood there like the Chiefs did last Super Bowl and watched playoff Lenny run through? I mean, I don't know the answer to that. That's why I'm asking. Are you suggesting that they were given a half-assed effort on purpose? They were like, you know, come on in, score. They didn't try to shed blocks?
Well, the difference with the Chiefs is that the Chiefs couldn't handle Fournette. My point here is that it might have been tactical.
Ira, I got to say, just the you mentioning that makes me wonder how many beers at Big Storm you had. I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, come on.
Face value, I thought the Bucs just blocked the hell out of the Colts defense on that play. From the offensive line all the way to Godwin downfield. I thought it was a tremendous block.
Can I make an argument that the right thing was to let him score, Steve?
I would agree with you, but not from the 29-yard line. I'll give you this, Ira. Maybe the defense was told, hey, look, if he breaks a run, don't worry about wrapping up. Just go for the strip. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. If he scores, it's okay. I'll give you that.
Maybe you're right because it was from the 29. It wasn't a chip shot field goal at that point, so maybe I'm pushing it too much.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a loud dome like that and that sort of thing. But you know, we're going to celebrate this win in a big way. But what the I mean, it was almost grounds for dismissal, Ira. Almost grounds for dismissal. Why would they kick the ball off nice and high to a fast returner? I mean, what were they doing? That was like the worst coaching move I've ever seen. Shouldn't Bradley Pinion have called the timeout and said, are you sure you want to kick it off to this guy?
Arian said as much today, Steve. He pointed out that it was a ridiculous kick. It's not what they should have done. Doesn't mean you kick it out of bounds and give it to him at the 40. You can't let that guy go. And the funny part is, Pinion is probably the best in the league at touchbacks. He's probably the best in the league, but he didn't do it. He didn't do it.
Didn't Arian say after the game he wanted them to kick it through the goalposts so they would have to go 75 yards?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So maybe Pinion just had a bad kick. That literally was what he was trying to do, and he just had a kick.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, because even he's one of, like you said, Ira, Pinion is one of the very best in the league, if not the best, at touchbacks. But he's still, and that's his goal every time he kicks it, but it's still only like 83, 84%. So, I mean, it's a big gamble, you know, to not just drill a low line drive in toward the corner and, you know, hope one of these, the wrong guy picks it up, but he gets to the 30 and away we go.
Yeah, I understand. Thank God for Mike Edwards, gentlemen. Johnny on the spot.
You know what that play reminded me of, Mike Edwards? I can't remember the year. Colts Steelers playoff game. Steelers at Colts. Steelers had a 3-point lead, if I recall correctly. Had the ball on the goal line, and they were about a minute and a half left, and they were trying to punch it in with Jerome Bettis to seal the game away. He fumbled, and it took a shoestring tackle by Ben Roethlisberger at midfield to save the game.
You're absolutely right, Lee. You are absolutely right. That's exactly what happened. And I think I was at that game. You're right. I mean, an incredible gaffe by a Hall of Fame running back. Unbelievable. Got the ball punched right out of his armpit. All he had to do was secure the football, you know. And you're right. That would have taken its place with the wrong way run, you know, by Jim Marshall.
Wow. Joe Pisarcik.
Joe Pisarcik, the famous play in the Buffalo-Tennessee playoff game, right? The lateral kickoff thing.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been right up there. I was at that game, Lee. It was shocking. It was shocking.
Wow.
Your take on the defense, Ira. What, you know, obviously Lee mentioned that Jamel Dean went down. Maybe that was before the podcast when we were chatting. But what happened there? What went wrong? What went right? Obviously, we saw the big plays. What do you think?
Well, the conversation turned markedly. I turned to Zach at halftime and said, they're making this Doyle guy look like Kellen Winslow. And I don't mean Kellen Winslow Jr. They couldn't cover him. They didn't cover him. And Lee, you've heard me say this before, but I think yesterday was a perfect example, especially with this team, especially with the way the secondary is right now. Lee, if they don't get the push up front, they're helpless. They're absolutely helpless. Every completion is an easy one, Lee. There's no buck around. Everything's easy. Now, you could say that about most teams, Lee, if they don't get the pressure, you know, the way the rules are. I understand that. But, you know, we're watching the Bucks every week, and it just jumps out at you. Thank God Shaq Barrett showed up in the second half, but Lee, the pass rush was terrible in the second quarter. Gave up 3 touchdowns. I think Reich's a little bit to blame, Lee, because one of the last things I said on our podcast, Lee, last week, one of the last things I said when I gave my prediction that the Bucks would win by 3, I think, I said if Wentz throws 40 passes, the Bucks are going to win that game. He threw 44, and as the day went on, he got less and less effective, Lee. You got a Jonathan Taylor. I know they had a huge second quarter throwing the football, but Lee, your best player, they went away from their best player, and they paid a price for it.
Dan Dockage is going absolutely bananas up in Indianapolis about this very same thing. The Bucs defense was dominant, like Seth Brooks kind of dominant. Dominant in the first quarter. And as I told Steve earlier, once Jamel Dean left, all of a sudden the pass defense completely fell apart. Where have we seen that before? Belichick said this last week about a completely different subject, and this is a big thing with me. If a certain player is not producing, if certain plays are not running, I don't understand what the benefit of it is to keep beating your head against the wall expecting the same result when you only have a limited amount of snaps per game.
Right.
And Frank Reich addressed this. I mean, like I said, Dan Dockage, who's the Steve Dumick of Indianapolis, and for old school college basketball fans, he's the guy who shut down Michael Jordan in the NCAA tournament. Jordan had his worst game, and Dockage, when he was told he was going to guard Jordan in practice from Bobby Knight, he threw up on the floor. True story. That's an absolute true story. When Knight came out, when they were ready for practice, Knight came out of the locker room, went to the team, and he started saying, "Hey, we're going to beat North Carolina. Here's how we're going to do it. Dockage, you're guarding Jordan," and he threw up. That is no joke. So anyway, I guess Dockage and some others are going so bananas up in Indianapolis. Frank Wright had a 2-minute explanation about why he was throwing the ball so much, and was number one, the Bucks were stopping Jonathan Taylor. He was getting right. Nowhere. Number one. Number two, guess how much they were averaging per play without using Jonathan Taylor? Whether it's an RPO, a pass, whatever. Guess what they were averaging per play?
8 yards.
Very good, Ira. 7.5. And like yeah. Frank Reich said, if you're running the ball at 7.5 yards a clip, you think you're doing darn good. We know the Bucs defense is so strong against them. We saw that with the Cowboys. They absolutely gave up handing the ball off to Ezekiel Elliott in season opener because he was getting nothing. And I'm a big believer that if something's not working, I don't understand. You know, maybe back in the 60s and 70s, you used the mentality of, oh, this running back will just wear on the defense. I don't know if that's capable against the Bucs in the 2010s or 2020s. I don't know if that's applicable anymore. But I'm a big believer, you know, you only got about 60 snaps. And if something's not working, why throw away snaps? Snaps are valuable. And we all know the backup cornerbacks are nothing to write home about with the Bucks. So I don't blame him whatsoever attacking. And like you said, that Doyle, they couldn't stop the guy.
Steve, I see both sides of the argument, Steve. But all I'll say is it caught up to them. It did catch up to them because Wentz wasn't particularly effective in the second half. Taylor did have one big drive towards the end of the game. But, Steve, when you throw in the 40s, you know, and you get up towards 50, there's going to be some mishaps. And the Buck pass rush showed up. It did.
They switched from the run because it wasn't working and early in the first half. And then they threw that 62-yard bomb or gorgeous throw. And so they stuck with it, and like most teams, or really every team, they have success throwing, carving up the Bucks. So they stuck with it, but I think you're right, Ira. They didn't go back to it fast enough. They waited too long when, you know, Wentz throws a pick, and they kept throwing. You know, I understand why a Colts fan would be freaking out, because essentially the Colts handed the game away. I mean, 6 turnovers, was it? 5 turnovers?
5, yeah.
You know, I mean, if that guy, whatever his name is, doesn't muff the punt, Scotty Miller did a great job breaking through and then pouncing on it. But if that guy doesn't muff the punt, what does this game look like, you know?
Nimes, guy went to North Carolina State, Nimes?
Yeah, he's the backup to Taylor. Guys, what about Gronkowski? I mean, some of the runs after catch, the yards after catch, remarkable.
Well, I mean, wow, that's all I can think of. There's a reason why Brady loves that security blanket. He's so darn good. Holy cow. He was the offense. You know, that's the beauty of the Bucs offense. Yeah, they took out Godwin. Yeah, they took out Evans. But you don't have enough horses to take out everybody. And there was Gronk, and there was playoff Lenny. And Gronk was phenomenal in the pass game. Phenomenal.
Steve, what was that play on third down that he bowled three people over to get that first down? That was huge.
Yeah, it was third and eight or third and six. I don't remember. One of the two. And the play was designed to throw it short to Gronk, and he basically broke two tackles, and by design, and he was there to just bowl a couple of people over and get the yardage, and he did. You know, there were a lot of huge plays, but he looks like, I talked about this after the Giants game, and in that Giants game, it was the first time that he's been with the Bucs where he was really doing what he did in New England every year, which was drag tacklers, run people over, and just have people hanging on him. Amazingly, he came back and did it again against the Colts. So I have to think he's in Hall of Fame form right now, Ira. We're seeing what Patriots fans were seeing forever, that the guy can catch, the guy can get open, and he's going to drag people. That's vintage Gronk, just dragging tacklers, and there they are. But I find it interesting that Arians, Ira, said that he wanted to see Gronk in more early in the game. You know, it was almost like a way of saying, well, Byron didn't put him in enough early. And meanwhile, Arians is the head coach. And of course, Gronk wants to play. And of course, Tom Brady wants him in there. But it was as if he was backhandedly saying Byron's in charge. But if you look at the snap counts, and Arians said they had to limit Gronk a little bit to try to keep him fresh, but he played 85% of the snaps. So something's not adding up somewhere, only if you think that Arians might have been a little frustrated by they weren't going to Gronk early and often in the game.
Steve, that was a great observation you made off the Giants game about Gronkowski. You really set the stage for what he did on Sunday in Indianapolis. You noticed that his physicality was back. It looked like he wasn't worried about re-injuring himself whatsoever. Full abandon. Excellent observation, Stevie. Speaking of Leftwich, gentlemen, did I see a report that the Windy City might be interested in Mr. Leftwich as a head coach, Lee? Did I see that?
Jason Lockefora. Basically, if you go by chronological order, Leftwich would be the first phone call Ryan Pace makes to take over for Nagy. When Nagy's fired.
Nothing would make Arians' day more than Leftwich getting hired after the season. Yeah, he'd have to replace him. But I think in the grand scheme of things, Leftwich would be a proud father whose son just graduated West Point or something. Arians wants this more than anything. Almost as much as he wants a second Lombardi trophy is to place Leftwich and Bowles. And, of course, we talked about how the road might be a little tougher for Leftwich. Because people still think, some do, that Arians is in charge of this offense, and nobody thinks that Arians is in charge of this defense. But we will see if Leftwich is a serious candidate. We'll see how he interviews. People are up in arms about Bieniemy. I'm getting a little tired of that story, Lee. There's got to be a little bit more to it. He doesn't automatically have to get a head coaching job. There might be some problem.
I'm not the Chiefs fan in the room. I have no idea. Got no idea. But I'll ask you this about Leftwich, Ira, in the framework of Arians. Arians has said, well, I'm loving coaching, but if my assistants left, if my top guys left, I'm not calling plays anymore, and I'd have to think long and hard about returning. If you're the Glazers, when do you have to ask Arians and say, hey, Bruce, are you coaching in 2022 or not? Because it's December 1st. We really need to know if we're going to run this organization responsibly. Are you coaching next year or what? And when does that conversation have to happen? Has it already happened? And what do you think's going on as it relates to that?
I think it's already happened. And I think the first time that it came up, Arians said, hold on, let me check somebody. And the guy he checked with was not Byron Leftwich. The guy he checked with happens to stand under center by the number 12, Lee, and you know I'm right about this. Lee, if he gets any sense that Brady's not coming back, then he's probably not coming back. I don't think that's a stretch, Lee. Come on. Are we really going to think Kyle Trask? And who knows? Who knows if Russell Wilson's going to be available or Aaron Rodgers? I mean, that's pie in the sky. We don't know that right now. So, you know, without Brady, I think he's hanging it up, hopefully with another trophy. But I think Brady's coming back. So I think Arians is coming back. I think that conversation's already happened.
Wasn't there a report that Brady was already talking with Light about an extension? I mean, after, I know he reworked his contract, but after he reworked his contract, there was a report maybe 3-4 months later that he was talking with Light about an extension.
I think you're right, Lee. This original thing about playing to 45, I think in Brady's mind, why put a limit on it? He's got a good team. Evans isn't going anywhere. Maybe he can keep Gronk there. I think they re-signed Godwin. Who knows what's going on with Antonio Brown? He's got a coach that he likes. Well, yeah, I don't think Brady's in any hurry to retire. But as you always point out, Giselle could be a factor.
It's really fascinating how the future of the Bucs could be. I'll just go ahead and throw this out there. But I was thinking, you know, let's say Brady hung it up in the next year or two. Okay, what are the Bucs going to do for a quarterback? Is it going to be Trask? Well, Arians isn't going to stick around. I don't think for that. You know, what are the Bucs going to do at quarterback? Do the Glazers want? You know, this has all sorts of different exit plans here. I thought that your next quarterback, and people will laugh, people might have a wreck, people might fall over, they're laughing so hard. Your next quarterback of the Bucs, I would not be shocked if it's Jimmy GQ.
Wow. Wow.
Because it seems like for whatever reason, the 49ers, you know, they got that big investment in Trey Lance, and it sure looks like they're trying to push him out the door. Jimmy GQ is a nice quarterback. His biggest problem is health. That's his biggest problem. And he'd be looking for a home. Obviously, the Bucs would be looking for a quarterback. Wouldn't that be interesting if Jimmy GQ actually does succeed Tom Brady, just not with the same team that they thought he would have?
Steve, I don't know that he's got the same. I don't think that he's got enough juice for the Glazers, especially after you've dealt with Brady all these years, and if Brady decides to hang him up, I think they go hunting for another big game trophy guy.
I think they might look at him as too old and too brittle, which is just a bad combination. You know, I mean, I don't know how old he is, but he's got to be at least 30 at this point. I mean, look it up real quick. Yeah, he just turned 30. And,
not a good combo.
You know, I don't know if that's a Glazer kind of combo anyway. You know, who knows? I mean, I have to laugh because I think about how the Panthers passed on Mac Jones, and that's just going to haunt them forever, you know, for at least a long time anyway, especially for the rest of this year. But if you drink beer, please make it Big Storm Beer, Florida's best craft beer, brewed locally. And there are so many Big Storm beers. You can see them all. Great descriptions at BigStormBrewery.com. There you can find the tap rooms and where it's sold near you. It's in Publix as well, all across Central Florida. Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. We talk a lot about the Bromosa, their great tangerine IPA, but there are many others. I'm a big Sunny Key Lime fan. Ira likes Bay Beer. Lee has been known to drink the classic Wavemaker Amber Ale, their original. And there are so many other greats. BigStormBrewery.com, tap rooms in Odessa, Cape Coral, Orlando at the Amway Center, and in Clearwater, where Ira himself watches Bucks games with fans. For every road game, he'll be there Sunday. BigStormBrewery.com. Thank you, Big Storm. Ira, in that game, you know, obviously we saw the offense. You know, I know you think Brady had a little bit of an off day, and yeah, he didn't start fast and strong, which was the goal of this team, was to come into the Dome, take the crowd out of it, and get over their flat road starts, and they did the exact opposite. Maybe it's because Donovan Smith led the pregame the huddle. I don't know. It was his first time doing that, and you know, I don't know if that's a good idea. I'm just kidding, but it was the first time for him to ever be out there leading the team like that. But you know, they looked more like the Bucks that you sort of envisioned, Ira, which is running the football, throwing the short passes effectively, carving up yardage, working the tight ends. And are we getting toward more what you think will be the playoff type of offense, or are they just struggling with this two safety stuff and they have to figure that out?
Well, I never thought I'd say this, guys, but I think Antonio Brown is going to change things. I think his presence, I don't think it's a stretch to suggest that when Brown was playing this season, he was the best receiver on the Bucs. Doesn't mean, you know, his last 3 years have been better than Mike Evans. I'm just saying, week in, week out, when he played, Lee, I think he was the most dangerous guy. You know, as you pointed out, you might be able to take care of Evans and Godwin, but there's Gronkowski, and now you add Brown to the mix, Lee, and all of a sudden, you know, this too deep safety thing, I think, could be shredded. Brady's smart enough to do it, obviously. And by the way, guys, we haven't talked about this very much, but Fournette is building a hell of a case for him as one of the top free agents on the 2022 market. So, Lee, what is the Bucs' reaction to that? Do they let him hit the market? Because at this point, he's a very productive back that other teams are going to be interested in. All it takes is one. So he's proven himself. He's proven that the postseason Fournette was not a fluke. He's going to make a lot of money, Lee. Do the Bucs let him test the free agent market? And what's Fournette's mindset about coming back to this offense? I would think, all things being equal, he'd like to be a Buccaneer, I would think.
I agree with that. I think he wants to be a Buccaneer. I think he likes it here. He's enjoying success. He's actually starting to be a team leader, you know, but as far as, you know, he had that speech at halftime, said, you know, you guys got to will this game. You got to have the will to win this, you know. He kind of took over. Then he told Peter King, he pulled Brady aside. He goes, look, either you're going to win this game or I'm going to win this game. It's going to be one of us two. And I thought that was very interesting. So, yeah, I think he wants to stay here. He's got success. He's having personal success. He like who doesn't like to play for Brady? And I think, and let's be honest, the Bucs brought everybody back. And I don't think that was because they don't like to smell the deodorant that Tom Brady uses.
Ronald Jones isn't doing anything wrong, Lee. This is not Ronald Jones. It's really not.
Yeah.
No. I mean, when Ronald Jones played Sunday, he did well. He gave, I think Bruce Arians even said he gave playoff Lenny some needed rest, and he produced when he was out there. So it's a great 1-2 punch. I'm going to hit you with this. A buddy of mine texted me Sunday night, and I never thought about this before. And he was comparing Leonard Fournette. He thought a perfect comparison to Leonard Fournette was O.J. Anderson. And immediately I said, no. I said, oh, and I remember O.J. Anderson as a young player, as a rookie, too. I was at his first game in the NFL, 198 yards. I was second row in the end zone for that game against the Cowboys. Never forget.
He had a great rookie season.
He was quick. He was quick when he was a young player. And after I texted this guy, like, O.J. Anderson was much quicker than Fournette. And then the more I got to thinking of it, Fournette sort of does remind me of O.J. Anderson with the Giants, the latter part of his career, where I don't know if the word lumbering is proper, but he was more of a power back. What do you think about that? Is that fair comp? The O.J. Anderson with the Giants to Leonard Fournette?
I don't think it's a terrible comparison. Anderson could cap that 1990 championship team that had Hostetler instead of Sims. O.J. Anderson, was the key figure on that offense. He battered Buffalo in that Super Bowl, where I thought Buffalo was the better team, and the Giants won that game. I think one of the few Super Bowls that was won by the inferior team that day. But Anderson was great. I think he might have had about 125 yards on the ground that day. And I never thought of him as a lumberer, and I don't think Fournette's a lumberer either. It's not a bad comparison. Steve, I would say I think Anderson was a little better than Fournette, but fairly close.
Well, he had a long career, Ira. I know you were already in Tampa by the time O.J. Anderson was with the Giants, but similar size and you know, ran with power. It's an interesting comparison going back a lot of years there. Fournette in the now, though, Ira, he's very versatile. I mean, Anderson caught his share of balls, but he kind of you know, just what was a running back later in his career. But hey, bottom line is with Fournette, it's a very interesting question for the offseason, because if Fournette comes back, Ronald Jones is not going to want to be a Buccaneer. Why would he? Why would he possibly want to be a Buccaneer? And then so you're putting everything on Fournette's shoulders for good money. And, you know, he's had a history of being up and down. Sean Murphy Bunting, as far as his mindset, Sean Murphy Bunting, who's not an old guy, was on Buccaneers Radio Network Monday night, Ira. He was talking about how he could see the maturity growing in Leonard Fournette and in his commitment and all that. So, I mean, this is a young player talking about an older guy's maturity growing when he got to the Bucs. I mean, I feel like Fournette's in a great place, and he has matured, and he's everything Tom Brady wants right now. I don't know. I don't know if they want to invest in him. I would love to. And then what happens to Fournette if Rojo leaves and you pay Fournette and then the organization says, we got to draft a running back because we want to make sure we have a 1-2 punch. And if we catch lightning in a bottle, then we got a, you know, the best backfield in the league for Tom Brady. And then Fournette pouts a little bit. I don't know. I feel weird about it, but if he keeps playing this well, the bottom line is Brady's going to say, we got to bring Lenny back, and they'll do it.
You're not crazy, Steve. You're not crazy. Cause you never know how a big contract is going to change a guy. You never know. But the way Fournette's playing right now, and based on what he did in the postseason, he certainly has won the Bucs over. And most importantly, Brady. So he's playing great. And let us not skip the offensive line. The coaches are doing a great job. By the way, Donovan Smithley, very, very solid year. Very solid. You know, I talk up Worfs all the time on this show. But, you know, Smith's been a beast. Durability. I mean, just incredible durability for Donovan Smith. Pain tolerance doesn't mean he's not hurt, but he doesn't miss a game. He just doesn't. Lead this last couple of years, towards, you know, the second half of last year and this year, best offensive line this franchise has ever had. Period.
I can't disagree. And since you bring up the offensive line, you know what, Nick Leverett. Whoever thought that guy would be playing? Much less, it looks like he's going to be starting next week against Atlanta. The way Arians was talking, it doesn't look like Elliott Marpet's going to be back yet. Although that's an assumption. We don't know. Arians pretty much ruled out Aaron Stinney for next week. You got to hand it to Jason Light. Son of a gun knows what he's doing with offensive linemen, and you would hope so. He was an offensive lineman himself, but you know he's the guy that has built this offensive line. He's the guy that drafted Marpet. He's the guy that drafted Donovan Smith. He's the guy that drafted Tristan Wirfs and Kappa. He's the guy that signed Ryan Jensen. So that's his offensive line, and it's one of the best in the league.
And the coaches are doing a great job, Steve. Speaking of Marpet, Steve, and I love Marpet. We all do. But, Steve, these oblique injuries, they're really pesky. And you don't usually come back in a week or two from an oblique. It doesn't sound that bad. But that's a tough injury. You know, it could be a month for Marpet. Now, unfortunately, Stinney went down because he was doing a heck of a job. I'm really not worried about the left guard against the Atlanta Falcons, Steve. I'm really not worried about it. Grady Jarrett's a nice player, but there's no excuse for the Bucs not going into Atlanta and stomping them. Although, I still remember the first half of that Atlanta game last year. That's one of the worst halves the Bucs have played in about 10 years. And that's saying about...
I remember you told me they look like a high school team.
That was disgraceful. That was disgraceful.
This Nick Leverett, I got a cool story for you, Ira. Now, I know in training camp, a lot of people, especially the roster cultists, you know, that they get all worked up about the practice squad guys and the bubble guys. They were all frothing at the mouth about Nick Leverett. And I'm like, oh, no. Maybe I'm jaded, but there's every year you seem to have one or two players. Well, they look really good in training camp, and you never hear from him again. So, you know, I didn't want to diss Leverett, but you know me, if I'm covering the Bucs, I'm worried about the guys that are going to be on the field, not the guys who may or may not be on the roster. So I rarely watched him. And there was one time there was a one-on-one drill, a pass rush, and I looked up and JPP is about ready to take the snaps. Okay. Then I noticed that Leverett's going against him. Like, oh boy, JPP's healthy now. He's going to work this kid over. Levert put JPP on his back. There was no other guard, just one-on-one. Levert's out there on island at JPP's mercy. He put JPP on his back like it was a WWE wrestler. Boom! I'm like, wow. And so maybe all the chatter about Levert was valid, but when he went in Sunday, I put out on Twitter, I said, you know, this might make people feel better. It's training camp. I get it. But he put JPP on his back once in a one-on-one drill. So if he could do that to JPP, maybe he can handle DeForest Buckner with some help from Jensen and Donovan Smith. And Levert pretty much held his own.
Yeah, there were a few hiccups, Steve, but nothing terrible. Izbitz, I'm going to ask you directly. And then, you know, you hate to give me anything. You know, if I say the sky's blue, you can argue with me, Stevie. Izbitz, I'm going to ask you directly. And I don't want any equivocation. Can we close the damn book on O.J. Howard? Can we?
Ooh. I actually have it written right down here, Iris. So you were in lockstep with me. I think at this point we can close the book on O.J. Howard, and we can close the book on Cameron Brate. He's not the player he was previously. I sense a lot of frustration in Brady more often than not when he throws toward Brate. Doesn't mean Brate doesn't make catches, but and he made a couple of good catches in this game, but he's not the player that he was. I don't see him getting the same separation, and I think the two of them combined, it's money that they can use elsewhere next season and go a different direction. So, I'm over it. I don't think either one of them is coming back. They may still have a big catch left in them, Ira, but I agree with you.
Interesting observation on Brate. He is not getting the separation that he used to. Lee, that leads me to believe he's not completely healthy, or he never will be. He just doesn't seem as smooth in his breaks as he once was, and he used to get 3 yards separation from the defender. And Lee, every catch he makes right now is contested. He's got good hands, and he's smart, but I think Steve's onto something there.
Steve might be. I'm not as down on Brate as you guys. And I referenced this earlier that Greg Cosell, ESPN, was doing breakdowns on how the Bucks are beating these two deep zones. Even though there's kind of a narrative out there, the two deep zones have the Bucks bottled up. And Cosell was demonstrating on film why that's not the case. And one player Cosell highlighted that he thought was playing exceptional as far as being bait, helping guys draw defenders away from other receivers, things of that nature, was Brate. And I'll just defer to Greg Cosell. He knows more about football than I do. He learned from Bill Walsh and Parcells and those guys. But he in his highlight, I may still have the video. It was not deleted. It's in Game Day Tampa Bay. It's in that post. I put that in there. You can look for it yourself. Game Day Tampa Bay this past Sunday, it was in that post. It was
Sage, I'll just throw a number out there, Lee. Brate has 7 catches in his last 21 targets, and he's just not the player he used to be. It doesn't mean he's not.
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. But you know, also notice that if Brady really doesn't like a guy, he shuts him out. Case in point, Justin Watts.
Steve, say that line again. That sounds impossible. That stat again.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, actually, I got it wrong. It's actually 8 catches in his last 21 targets.
That's not good.
And I'm going to say this, and I'm like most people. I'm done with O.J. Howard. I think I may have written this already. I know I've written this in the comments. I'll say it for the record on this podcast. O.J. Howard returns next year. With the Bucks. Yeah, I said it. You know why?
Wow.
You know why? Dirt cheap. Nobody's going to want to pick him up. The Bucks will get him back at a massive discount, and the Bucks could make an argument, and probably someone already has done it in One Buck Palace. Hey, he's still recovering from that Achilles. Next year he'll be 100%. We'll get him for a dirt cheap rate. It's a win-win, and we only sign him to a one-year contract. If he doesn't do anything, we wash our hands of him.
Interesting.
Well, I'll say this on that. I think history says that first-round draft picks, they always get third, fourth, fifth chances. Like, look at Brashad Perriman. So O.J. Howard's in that camp. There's going to be five or six teams whose general managers were like, oh, man, we were drooling over that guy in the draft, and and he was, you know, injured, and, you know, Brady liked him enough to keep him around. You know, I think there'll be three, four, five teams interested in O.J. Howard, thinking the exact same thing you're thinking, Lee, is that, hey, he's cheap and he's, you know, got some talent and he's worth a flyer. So I think there'd be a market for him.
One thing I think is worth mentioning, and Lee, you know I'm not going to go through a podcast without mentioning Giovanni Bernard, Lee. You know that.
Why? Did he pay you your lunch today?
Lee, I'll say this. To be very honest about it, one of the aspects of Leonard Fournette's stunning renaissance, basically since midseason 2020, but most specifically this season, Lee, by getting back to where he was in Jacksonville, and, you know, Steve always said, hey, he caught 76 passes, which he did in Jacksonville, but he struggled early as a Buccaneer, catching the ball. They went out and got Bernard. They weren't totally sold on Fournette as a third down back and a, you know, guy who can do the check downs. And Lee, Bernard can't get on the field. Lee, can't get on the field. Another tribute towards Fournette, whatever the hell was said in that meeting between Arians and Fournette, where Arians said, you want me to cut you, I'll cut you. He hasn't been the same player since, Lee. What a meeting. What a meeting.
I don't know if you heard this or not, and I wrote about this a couple weeks ago when Fournette was on Richard Sherman's podcast. That specific incident, for lack of a better word, between Arians and Fournette, that happened on a team plane.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Apparently they got into it on a team plane, and Fournette said he was so mad he was crying.
Well, you usually don't hear things like that on a team plane. There's other people around. That's a really... You would think that's going to be a private conversation. That'll be private.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what game it was, Lee. I don't remember the game.
No, I don't either.
But obviously, Rojo was entrenched as the number one at that point. Here we are, two-thirds of the way through this season, and there ain't no doubt about who's number one.
Ira, question for you. Question for you, Sage. If Devin White is not able to be himself... He went into this game with his quad injury, and then apparently he got a hip injury. He tried to come back in the second half. Arians even said it, but it wasn't really Devin White. If he is just basically hobbled for the rest of the season, quad issue healing, bad hip, can they win a Super Bowl if Devin White is just a marginal player?
I don't think so. I think he sets the tone for the defense. Now, Steve, that's a hell of an assumption, and there's no reason to think that's going to be the case. As a matter of fact, Lee, if the trainers tell me he's not going to be 100%, but he could play, I would not play him in Atlanta. I would not. And you're with me on that, Lee. I want the guy ready when it counts. Lee, they got a three-game cushion. That's why you get a three-game cushion.
Exactly.
You know?
Wait a minute, Sage. Wait a minute. Back it up. Back up the bus, Ira. Three-game cushion. Nobody's goal is to win the NFC South, and that's it. They got to win. Matthew Stafford's falling apart. The Rams are falling apart. Arizona, they're doing great things, but I still think everyone believes they're going to lose a game or two. The Bucs need that number two seed to get themselves a couple of home games. And then if they gotta, you know, win the NFC Championship on the road, like Lee said, in Green Bay, or even in Arizona against a team that hasn't been there before, okay. But they gotta win. None of this cushion.
Steve, are you saying they can't beat the Atlanta Falcons with Kevin Minter? Is that what you're saying?
I'm very confident they can, Ira. But I can't think of it as a cushion. You know, yeah, if he's not healthy, you know, I think they can beat him without it. Exactly, but. Not in general. There's no cushion.
Lee, I gotta have the old Devin White. I mean, I gotta have the dynamic Devin White. So my best way of doing that is to make sure that he heals, and I need him in January. Lee, I need him in January.
Yeah, your take there, Ira, is very prudent. You've got one of the better linebackers in the NFL. He's dinged up. How bad, we don't know. his backup is certainly capable, and you're playing a doormat of a team. So I agree with you. You know, Devin White is much more needed in January than he is against the Falcons. Devin, take a week off. Want to go home? Want to play with your horses? Whatever you want to do, you got the week off. We need you for Buffalo. We don't need you for Atlanta.
All right, Ira, look, before we get out of here, I want to remind everybody, Bill Curry Ford presents the podcast, BillCurryFord.com, and a Big Storm Beer. Guzzle it up. It is the best craft beer in Florida. Tap rooms in Odessa, Clearwater, Cape Coral, and in Orlando at the Amway Center. Sage will be in Clearwater, of course, on his perch there, the beautiful outdoor patio covered, watching the Bucks game against Atlanta with Bucks fans next Sunday. We'll talk more about that next week. And Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Put it in your favorites, bookmark it. Any disaster in your home, you call them immediately, 24/7. They'll get out there, give you that free assessment so you can have an honest assessment of what's happening in your home or your business, mold, fire, whatever it is that needs to be restored in a hurry. Ira, across the NFL, anything stand out to you that Bucks fans should have an eye on, or just in general that really knocked your socks off about this last NFL week?
I think it's all there in front of the Bucks. You know, Lee mentioned Arizona, and it's impressive what they've done with Kyler Murray sidelined. But, you know, they probably got to play the 49ers again. I don't have their schedule in front of me. Probably have to play the Rams again. And the Bucks' schedule, I think, is in their favor. I think it's favorable. Steve, you know, Buffalo's tough. Sometimes Buffalo doesn't come to play. And when they don't, they get spanked. And it's happened more than once. Lee, they lost to Jacksonville. They lost to Jacksonville. So let's remember that. I think the Bucks are in very good shape. They haven't played their best football. I'd like to see Brady a little sharper. But I'm going to say this, Lee. I think Antonio Brown, I've said it three times on this podcast. Boy, he was playing so well before he got hurt. He's going to be hungry. Brady's hungry to have him back. If Antonio Brown's back on that field at Mercedes-Benz, good luck, Falcons. Good luck.
All right, Sage. Well, just to let everybody know, since you brought it up, Arizona still has to host the Rams, host the Colts, and head to Dallas day after New Year's. So a couple of good opportunities there for them to take a loss.
Steve, are they done with the Niners?
They are done with the Niners, and they still have the gift that always gives, which is the Lions and the Bears. So they still have got some easy ones on their schedule as well.
Okay.
All right, Ira, get that out of here. We'll be back for a second podcast, and we'll keep straightening you out.